just like yesterday, only something was different. Then it had been as real as anything, so real that I couldn't believe Shona hadn't seen it. Now it was barely visible, a pale, faded, watered-down version of the same ship, almost transparent. I felt I could swim through it. Together we swam towards the ship. At least we tried to. One moment it was there, the next it had faded so much it was barely a shadow. I reached a hand out as we approached the disappearing ship, tried to touch it. With a tingling, buzzing feeling in the ends of my fingers, my hand went straight through the ship's hull. I gasped and jumped back, my tail flicking so hard to get me away from there, it created a cloud of bubbles. "What's going on?" I whispered.
"Was it like this yesterday?"
Aaron asked. "No, it was absolutely solid. It was alive. A ship with sails and decks and people and... Wait!" I pulled Aaron to the side of the ship, and we snaked along the edge of the channel. "The woman, she was in a porthole somewhere around the middle. Let's see if she's still there." We swam past the portholes. Yesterday, I'd seen inside them. Small cabins, each with a bed and a cupboard. Today, all we could see was darkness inside everyone. We came to the one where I'd seen the woman. "This was it," I said, flicking my tail to hold me back. I nudged Aaron forwards. "You first." Aaron swam up to the porthole and looked inside.
"Just darkness like the others," he said.
I swam alongside him and we peered through the glass together. Aaron was right. There was only darkness. Except, as I stared into the darkness, shapes began to emerge. "Aaron, look over there!" I jabbed a finger at the glass, careful not to touch it.
"What am I looking at?"
Aaron scrunched up his face and stared into the room.
"It's just murky gloom like the others."
"Right at the back," I insisted.
"The back of what? I can't see anything. I can hardly even see the ship."
"The back of the room," I said less confidently. Why couldn't he see it? Yes, it was dark. Yes, it was murky, and yes, the sight was fading as I watched, but I could still see it clearly enough. Was I imagining it? "The bed, the..." I stopped. I couldn't say anything else, couldn't speak. She was there, the woman, sitting on the side of the bed, her head in her hands, slumped as if she'd given up. I wanted to swim as far away as I could, and yet I was transfixed. "The woman," I whispered without taking my eyes off her. "Over there, on the bed." In that moment, as if she had heard me, the woman raised her head. Almost lifeless, almost ghost-like, she left her bed and seemed to float towards the porthole.
"I can't see anything,"
Aaron insisted, his voice starting to sound agitated.
"Even the ship is disappearing. It's almost gone."
I could still see the ship. It was fading rapidly, but it was still there, just, and so was she. She met my eyes, reached out a hand towards me. I held my hand up to the porthole, for some reason no longer afraid to touch it. My fingers tingled so hard, it felt as if they were being prodded by 100 needles. I ignored the feeling and flattened my hand so I was holding my palm against the window. The woman did the same. This time I didn't feel glass. I felt a hand, flesh and bone, warm against my palm. I stared as her eyes met mine. And then, a second later, it had changed. In an instant, as if they had never been there at all. The window, the woman, and the ship were gone.
"What happened?"
Aaron was spinning round in a circle like a shoal of hungry fish, his tail flapping frantically.
"Where did it go?"
I looked around too. We were still in the channel, but it was now empty. The stillness had been replaced by a soft current. Seaweed stroked the tip of my tail. Fish darted by in small groups like commuters just out of work and hurrying home. "It's gone," I said. It wasn't the most helpful reply in the world, but what else did I have?
"There you are!"
Shona rounded a corner and swam towards us. Are you okay?
Did we disappear?
Aaron asked her. Shona scowled. Not exactly.
What do you mean? I said.
Seth was beside her.
Well, you were there, but sort of not really there, he told us. It's hard to explain. It was as though you were in another dimension or something.
It was weird, Shona added,
as if we didn't already know that. Look, I'm really sorry, but I have to go, Seth said. I don't want to risk Neptune's temper if I'm late.
He had my sympathy. I'd been on the receiving end of Neptune's bad moods enough times to know it wasn't fun.
I'll see if I can find out anything that could help, and we'll send word with a messenger if I do,
Seth went on.
I hate to leave you like this, but... It's fine, Aaron said. We understand.
We said our goodbyes to Seth, and tried not to watch or listen as he and Shona said theirs, except for one bit that I couldn't help overhearing.
I hope everything's okay with Neptune, Shona said, and he doesn't give you a hard time for having had a couple of days away.
He won't, Seth assured her, and if he does, I'll tell him I'm entitled to a couple of days off with my girlfriend.
I made myself stop listening after that. It was mostly just kissing noises anyway. Then Seth was gone, and the three of us were swimming back to the island. We saw it again, I told Shona. I didn't really want to pull her out of the happy glow that she suddenly had around her now that Seth had called her his girlfriend, but this was what we'd come out here for, and I couldn't really focus on anything else.
The ship? Shona asked.
I nodded.
What about the woman? Did you see her again, too?
Yes.
No,
Aaron said at the same moment. He looked at me.
Emily saw her. I was looking in the exact same place, but I couldn't see her. Emily could see the ship for longer than I could, too.
Wow, that's...
Shona's voice trailed away. I didn't blame her. I mean, what exactly could she say? That's completely freaky. That's impossible. That's absolutely beyond ever explaining in a million years. It didn't matter what she thought. Whatever else was going on, I knew one thing. We weren't going to figure it out by hanging around in a deserted channel out at sea. Come on, I said, starting to swim back the way we'd come. If we go now, we'll probably get back in time for dinner. And then, because Shona was my best friend, and I wanted her to be happy even if I was a bag of anxious confusion, I gave her a hug and said, "And you can talk about your boyfriend all the way back." I even managed to half-listen, as Shona happily talked about Seth, while the three of us swam back to the island, to the others, and to a meal that my stomach was way too jittery for me to even think about eating. Aaron and I filed out of the dining room with everyone else. He'd insisted I eat, so I'd forced some food down my throat and tried my best to chit-chat with the others about any old rubbish, but I'd had enough now. Let's get out of here, I said, pulling him outside with me. We made our way onto the road and started walking towards the woods. I'd have been happy just to go and sit in the middle of the trees and stare into space, not talking to anyone or thinking about anything, but I knew that wasn't going to happen. And I knew that we weren't really heading for the woods either. We were heading towards the house in front of us. Lyle's house. We stopped walking. We were almost directly in front of Lyle's front door. I looked at Aaron. Come on, I said. Let's get this over with. We walked up the path in silence. Aaron turned to me.
Ready?
He asked. I shrugged. Ready as I'll ever be, I replied and knocked on the door. We heard shuffling sounds inside. A few moments later, Lyle opened the door. He looked dreadful, even by his standards. His eyes were like black holes, his shirt was hanging out of his trousers, his hair was ruffled and messy.
"What do you want?"
he asked. "Well," I began. "We don't mean to bother you."
"Well, don't then."
Lyle turned to go back inside. But we have come to talk to you, I added firmly. Lyle paused for a moment, and then he looked right at me and nodded, as if he knew what we wanted to talk about, as if he'd been expecting it, even though he'd pretended he hadn't. Then he turned away and went inside, leaving the door open for us. He called over his shoulder.
You'd better come in then, and close the door behind you. Take a seat.
Lyle waved a hand carelessly across his living room. I tried not to look at the dirty plates piled everywhere, with half-eaten meals going mouldy on them. Lyle must have seen me trying not to look, because he scrabbled around, picking up the crockery and taking it into the kitchen.
I wasn't expecting visitors,
he said by way of an explanation.
It's fine, Aaron said brightly. We didn't even notice, did we, Em?
Not at all, I lied, as I stared round the room and wondered briefly if he might have been the victim of a burglary. Aaron and I found a relatively untouched spot on the sofa and sat down. As I sat, my eyes fell on the dresser at the side of the room, and I no longer cared about or noticed anything else. I stood up, walked over to the dresser, and picked up a framed photo as Lyle came back into the room. It was a wedding picture, a smiling couple. On the left, dressed in a crisp white suit, was Lyle. He was gazing at the woman next to him with such a huge smile that I could barely recognize him as the man in front of me now. The woman, smiling brightly back at him, her long red hair flowing over her shoulders and touching the top of a beautiful white wedding dress, was the woman whose face had barely left my thoughts for 2 days. I put the photo down and turned to Lyle. I've seen her, I said before I could stop myself.
You've what?
I've seen her, I repeated, realizing somewhat belatedly that perhaps I should have tried to think of a gentle way of breaking the news to him.
Luella?
His voice broke as he said the word, as if the word itself broke him. He cleared his throat.
You saw Luella?
He asked again, his words like splintered glass. As he said her name, I had a vision of her the first time I'd seen her, fists pounding against the porthole. I'm a winner, I'd thought she was calling, and couldn't understand why she'd be saying that. Now I realized she hadn't been saying I'm a winner at all. Suddenly it was blindingly obvious what she'd been trying to tell me. I'm Luella. I nodded. I wasn't sure I could trust myself to speak. Lyle stared at me. His face was so white, I wondered if he was going to be sick. His eyes were dark like the deepest caves in the sea. He held my gaze for, I don't know how long. It felt like forever. The room seemed to close around us, keeping everything else on the outside, and leaving the three of us alone in this new world that made no sense and that none of us knew how to explore. Eventually, Lyle spoke. In a voice like gravel, he slowly said,
You'd better tell me everything.
And so between us we did. We told him all of it, even the bits that we were nervous about, in case we were in trouble.
We didn't mean to trespass,
Aaron stressed when we told him about finding the chair.
We fell, we got lost, and
it doesn't matter.
Lyle brushed aside the interruption.
Go on.
I told him about seeing Luella the first time.
How did she look? How did she seem?
He asked, his voice breaking with urgency. She, I hesitated. Should I tell him the truth? That she looked as filled with pain and fear as he did now. She looked okay, I mumbled eventually. Lyle let out a breath, and his body relaxed a tiny bit.
Oh, thank goodness,
he said, and I knew that for once telling a white lie had been the right thing to do. We told him about going back again. We described the ship, the way it had been almost transparent.
The weird thing was that only Emily could see Luella,
Aaron said.
I couldn't see her at all.
The ship seemed much less real today, too, I added. Lyle nodded, as if this made some sort of sense to him.
Carry on.
That's about it, I finished off. We've told you everything. Lyle didn't respond. He just sat there, leaning forward, his elbows on his knees, his face pulled into a tight frown, his eyes moving from side to side as if chasing thoughts around his mind. Then, abruptly, he stood up and turned away from us. Was that it? Now we'd told him our story, were we being dismissed?
Are you throwing us out?
Aaron asked. Lyle spun back round. His gaze was like a dark tunnel that would trap us forever in its depths if we weren't careful.
Quite the opposite, he said.
I'm going to take a few deep breaths. Then I'm going to make a hot chocolate for each of us. And then I'm going to come back and sit down and we'll keep talking.
I don't know what else there is to say, I blurted out. We've told you everything. Lyle nodded slowly.
Yes, I know you have. And believe me, you will never know how grateful I am to you for your bravery and your honesty in doing that.
So what else do you want us to tell you? Aaron asked.
Lyle paused for a moment. Then, in a voice as steady as the horizon, he said,
I don't want you to tell me anything. Now it's my turn. I'm going to tell you my story.
Chapter 12. Aaron and I sat together on the sofa, listening to the sounds of Lyle muddling around in the kitchen, a kettle coming to the boil, the chink of jars and cups and spoons. We didn't talk. My mouth was too dry to speak, even if I had the first clue what I might say. I had a hunch Aaron felt the same. Instead, we sat in silence and held each other's hands so tightly they could have been our lifelines. Maybe they were. Eventually, after what felt like an age, but was probably less than 5 minutes, Lyle came back in the room. He handed us our drinks, and I held mine with both hands. My nerves had made my body shiver, and the hot drink warmed me.
Okay, Lyle said. If you're ready, I'll tell you everything. And when I've done that, between us, we'll try to figure out our next move. How does that sound?
Perfect, I said. My nerves turned to excitement as Lyle began. Whilst we sipped our hot chocolate, he told us his story, his and Luenna's story.
First, some basic facts,
Lyle began, which seemed like a good idea. Basic facts sounded safe, solid, known, until he added,
Let's start with Atlantis.
Aaron's jaw fell open. I nearly dropped my mug.
Atlantis? Aaron asked, almost in a whisper.
Which is a place that exists? I queried. As in, like, in actual real life? Lyle nodded.
It's completely secret, he said.
Humans know nothing about it, other than the stories they make up. Which are little more than fairy tales.
What about merfolk? I asked.
In the merfolk world, the rumours about Atlantis are slightly closer to the truth. But even merpeople are a long way from knowing its full story. Neptune ensures the secret of Atlantis is the best-kept one of all.
Neptune? I burst out. He's in charge of Atlantis! Lyle frowned.
Of course, he said. Neptune is in charge of everything to do with the oceans, although even he rules from a safe distance.
So how do you know about it? I asked. Lyle turned his dark gaze on me.
Because, he said, Atlantis is my employer.
You work for Atlantis? I gasped. I thought you were in charge of this island. Is that just a front? I could feel my hackles rising. Was Lyle going to turn out to be yet another adult who pretended to be one thing just so he could get away with something completely different? I'd met more than enough of those to last a lifetime.
No, it's not a front. It's part of my job. And it's a very important part. It's just not quite as important as the other half.
Go on, I prompted him.
Okay, so half of my job is the day-to-day running of Five Bays Island and looking after visitors, as you have seen.
I stopped myself from making any comment about how we hadn't actually seen that much of him looking after the island or its visitors, i.e. us.
To be fair, most of the work with visitors is Luena's job,
Lyle added quickly.
My work is mostly in the background.
So half of your job is looking after the island, Aaron said.
What's the other half? The Atlantis half.
Lyle's voice was steady.
I am a record keeper, he said.
A what? I asked.
A record keeper. For Atlantis. We keep records of people and boats.
Which people? Aaron asked. What boats?
Look, what I'm telling you now is absolutely top secret. I could get into serious trouble for sharing this. Do you understand?
Of course we do, Aaron and I replied in unison.
Okay, so I don't know what tales you might have heard about it, but Atlantis is where people and ships go when they are lost at sea. My job is to check them in.
Check them in? I asked. How do you know when they've gone there?
Two ways. You've already seen my lookout spot. When I went there yesterday, I could tell that someone had been there. I just didn't know it was you.
You mean the watchtower? Aaron asked.
That wasn't just us. Everybody went.
Not the watchtower,
Lyle interrupted him.
The other lookout place.
The chair? I said. Lyle nodded.
It's an outpost. Well, let's say it's a bit like an embassy.
For Atlantis? Aaron asked.
Yes.
That's why it's out of bounds, I mused. And almost impossible to reach without half killing yourself, Aaron added.
I'd apologize, but strictly speaking, you weren't supposed to go there.
We didn't mean to, I mumbled. Lyle held up a hand.
I know, and you're not being punished. I'm grateful. If you hadn't been there, we wouldn't be having this conversation, and you have given me my first ray of hope for days.
Okay, go on, Aaron said.
Lookout Reach, the place you found, is where I am based for much of the time,
Lyle continued.
I see boats from there, even ones that are not visible to most people, only to certain types.
Certain types? I asked. Lyle paused. Then he said,
I am a semi-mer, like you.
My mouth literally dropped open as I stared at him. And Luena? I asked. He nodded.
She was a semi-mer too.
Then he shook his head.
Is. Luena is a semi-mer. I refuse to believe she has gone.
Go on, I said gently.
So, I was at my lookout post yesterday, just before we met at Deep Blue Bay.
Of course, it was you, I burst out. I saw you. I turned to Aaron. Remember when we helped the others who were stuck on the ledge? I saw something in the water. You convinced me it must be one of our friends from Shiprock. It wasn't. It was Lyle.
I've been working overtime,
Lyle admitted.
Only
I'm not checking anyone in at the moment. I'm trying to learn if I can check them out.
Check them out of Atlantis? I asked. Is that possible?
Rarely,
Lyle replied in a hoarse whisper.
So once people go to Atlantis, they never come back?
Aaron asked. Lyle shook his head.
Only those with specialist knowledge of Atlantis and its ways stand even the smallest chance of making it. And those who know the ways of Atlantis are unlikely to have found themselves there in the first place. So no, hardly anyone comes back from Atlantis. In any case, most don't want to.
Why not? I asked. Lyle shook his head and half smiled.
It is the most dazzling place. City walls that shine like gold, staircases that take you to the tops of trees where birds sing the most beautiful tunes, rivers that run with the sweetest drinks, sunlight that warms you all the way through to your bones.
It sounds amazing, Aaron said.
Yes, it does,
Lyle answered.
But it is not all that it seems, and it doesn't last.
So you want to get someone away?
Aaron asked. I swallowed. Luenna, I put in. Lyle glanced at me and nodded.
Luenna and I work for Atlantis from this island. I check people in, but she helps keep them from ever getting there in the first place.
Lyle paused.
You understand what I'm saying, don't you?
I hesitated.
Atlantis is where those at sea go when they are lost.
He emphasized the last word and waited for us to register what he meant.
Lost, I said eventually. As in...
Lyle nodded slowly.
As in gone. For good. Think of it as a holding place, a last stop in between life and death.
I let out a breath. Before either of us could say anything, Lyle carried on.
Luenna is one of the most highly skilled waymakers there is.
Waymaker? Aaron broke in.
She guides boats through difficult passages, helps to keep them safe. You already know that this island sits in one of the most dangerous parts of the ocean. Well, unseen by the ships or their passengers, Luenna swims ahead of them and helps them through channels they don't even know exist. Atlantis has a sort of magnetic pull. The waymakers use this to make alterations to a ship's course without its occupants even knowing they are doing so. That's what Luenna did. Does. She keeps passing boats safe from a journey that no one wants them to make.
A journey to Atlantis, Aaron finished.
I started to make connections. Guiding Prosperous too, I muttered. The ship had been due to pass here last Friday.
That was her job, wasn't it?
Lyle tried to reply. He opened his mouth, but nothing came out, so I carried on instead. Luenna was meant to help Prosperous too through the passage, help keep the ship and its passengers safe. Am I right? Without lifting his head, Lyle nodded. For a moment, no one spoke. What could we say? Eventually, in a soft croak, Lyle went on.
We had lunch together. The ship was due to pass at 4 in the afternoon. It's been passed before many times. There has never been a complication. Luenna went off to work with a smile. I can see her now. Her eyes sparkling. Her hair.
I reached a hand out and touched his arm. Lyle let my hand rest for a moment, then moved his arm to swipe a hand across his eyes.
She had something to share with me. Said she would tell me after work. She was going to make us a special dinner.
He paused for ages before adding hoarsely,
"She never came back."
"Oh, no, that's awful," I said.
"Do you know what happened?" Aaron asked.
"I didn't at the time. I watched the ship from lookout reach, smiled to myself as I saw it weaving through the channels. I knew Luenna was steering it along. And then..."
He stopped. "And then?" I nudged him. Lyle shook his head, as if he were trying to deny the truth of his own words.
"And then it went,"
he said finally.
"Disappeared. I saw it go."
"Go?" I asked. "How did it go?"
"Straight down, as if it had been sucked under and swallowed up by the sea in one mouthful. All that was left behind was a line of giant bubbles across the surface of the ocean."
Memories of a kraken came into my head, a huge, fierce sea monster that stole treasure and gold from ships that strayed into the Bermuda Triangle. But even the kraken couldn't gobble up a ship of that size in one bite.
"It was an earthquake,"
Lyle said flatly.
"Happened out there in the channel. Two plates under the earth shifting right beneath the boat. Add that to the high tide and the magnetic power from Atlantis that Luenna was exerting to keep the boat on track, and you have a powerful combination."
"What happened?" asked Aaron.
"In short, the earth opened up beneath the ship, sent a rocket of bubbles and air shooting upwards, hit Luenna's magnetic force and sucked the boat right out of the sea and down into the vacuum below. Earth, air, water, tides all mixed together with the ship stuck in the middle. 10 seconds it took, and it was gone. The ship, the people, my wife."
Suddenly everything made sense. This had all happened on Friday, the day before we'd arrived. No wonder Lyle had been in such a state the whole time we'd been here. A bunch of visiting kids was hardly going to be his priority when his wife had just gone missing. "Why didn't you say something?" I asked. "Why didn't you cancel our trip?" Lyle almost laughed.
"If I'd had enough spare thoughts in my head to do so, I would have,"
he admitted.
"But all my thoughts were on Luenna and the ship. I had completely forgotten you were even coming till your teacher phoned from the beach to say you were here."
"I'm not surprised," Aaron said. "Crikey, we were the last thing you needed."
Lyle hesitated before replying.
"Maybe,"
he said after a while.
"Or maybe you were exactly what I needed."
"Really?" I asked. "How do you figure that out?"
"Look, here's what I know. The ship went missing, and the earthquake took Luenna down with it."
"You know that for sure?" Aaron interrupted. "I mean, there isn't any chance that she just got stuck in the rubble of the earthquake, but she's out there somewhere now, and she'll be home soon."
I envied Aaron his innocent hope. He hadn't seen the woman in the porthole. He didn't have the panic in her eyes burned into his mind.
"She went down with the ship,"
Lyle said.
"I know it. I tried to tell myself otherwise at first. But it's been 3 days, and she hasn't returned. She's gone. Even if I had wanted to hope, wanted to tell myself the ship had simply changed course and Luenna had stayed out at sea for some reason, I couldn't. See, when a ship and its people are lost at sea, the other place I see them is on my radar in the watchtower."
"We didn't see a radar,"
Aaron pointed out. I remembered the locked door with a private no-entry sign. I guess the radar was in there.
"It's the room we don't include on the guided tour,"
Lyle answered. We hadn't had much of a guided tour. I wasn't going to pull Lyle up on that right now, though.
I avoided going to the watchtower for hours, telling myself that the ship had just changed its course and Luenna would be home soon.
Lyle went on.
But by night time, I knew I had to face the truth, and I went to look. I could see then that the ship had been lost, Luenna with it, and I had to check them into Atlantis.
So that was when you gave up? I asked.
Well, yes, but only temporarily. Because on Saturday, something extremely unusual happened, something I have never seen before, not once a ship has been recorded as entering Atlantis.
You saw it? Aaron said.
I did. I saw it for the first time late afternoon on Saturday, shortly before you arrived. I was at my lookout point. It was 24 hours since the ship had disappeared, and I was waiting there, hoping for... I don't know what I was hoping for. I was almost beyond hope. But then I saw it, just for a matter of minutes. But it was there.
Like when we saw it the next day, I murmured.
Sunday, yes. I had a lot of catching up to do, organizing your week, so I couldn't get back there again until later in the day.
Which was when I saw you. Lyle nodded.
I reckoned if there was any chance of seeing the ship a second time, it would be on the high tide again, and from the same place. Lookout reach.
That was why you said to meet after high tide, I concluded, suddenly remembering Lyle joining us with wet hair. He hadn't showered, especially for us. He'd been in the sea. So you could go back to lookout reach to search for the ship first.
Exactly.
And did you see it that time? Aaron asked.
Clear as anything.
Lyle smiled gently, as if seeing his wife in front of him and smiling just for her.
The ship was out there, heading this way. 15 minutes I had before she was gone again.
Have you seen it since? I asked.
I glimpsed it this morning, but barely. It was fading. She's going from me.
His voice broke on the last words.
Can't you go after it? Aaron asked. You work for Atlantis. Can't you just go there and bring her back?
Lyle almost laughed. He shook his head.
Believe me, I would if I could. But Atlantis is not a place you can just go to. It is a place where you find yourself, if you are very unlucky. My job is on this side. It is a numbers game. I am more or less an accountant, keeping track of losses and gains.
So no one can go there, I said. But how come we can see the ship? And why is it fading?
I've been asking all the same questions myself, and studying the answers using every bit of knowledge of Atlantis that I have,
Lyle replied.
I've been up day and night, puzzling over every detail. To my knowledge, this has never happened before in my lifetime. You understand? Never.
Seeing a ship after it's gone to Atlantis, you mean? I asked.
Yes. It's virtually unheard of. I mean, there are rumours. I've read the writings of the old R.K.'s.
Aaron frowned.
R.K.'s?
Record keepers. The ones that went before me. I've been studying their stories, their experiences, to see if I could find anything that would help.
What did you discover? I asked.
Not much. Some wrote of occasional sightings of ships that had returned. Others talked of portals between this world and Atlantis. But it was all conjecture. There was no hard evidence. None of them could prove anything. To be honest, there wasn't much I hadn't heard before, and I've never believed any of it, till now.
Till you saw the ship with your own eyes, I said.
Exactly. Since then,
I've been unable to think of anything else. The sightings gave me a shred of hope. The fact you saw it too has doubled that hope, but dashed it at the same time.
Dashed it? I asked. Why is that?
The sightings meant that those on board the ship were trying to come back, to leave Atlantis.
But that's a good thing, isn't it? Aaron insisted.
That is, yes. But they are fading, which means the attempts are failing. Each time they try and fail, the chance of a successful return gets slimmer. And each day that goes by takes them further and further away. As a record keeper, I know it takes 6 days for a ship to pass through my radar before it's gone for good.
I sipped my drink. It was almost cold now, but the chocolatey taste was still good. What do you mean? Lyle sighed.
It's complicated.
Try us, Aaron said.
Well, time works differently in Atlantis. When a ship enters, the first day there is the same length as a day here. That is day one. Day two, it begins to change.
In what way? I asked.
Time passes strangely,
Lyle replied.
On the second day, 24 hours in this world is like a week in Atlantis. Day three is like a month. Day four is 6 months. On day five, anything can happen. Time just goes wonky. It could pass like a normal day. It could be a year or anything in between. Everything is getting skewed ahead of day six.
His voice faded away and he looked down at the floor.
What happens on day six? Aaron asked.
Lyle spoke to the carpet.
At the end of day six, it's over. The ship is gone forever. There have never been any tales of a ship returning after day six. Not even rumours.
I counted on my fingers. Prosperous Two had disappeared on Friday. If that was day one, that meant today was day four. Lyle must have seen me adding up.
Yes, he said. 2 more days, and then I have to give up hope for good.
But I saw her, I insisted. I saw the ship, saw Luenna.
Fading,
Lyle pointed out. Yes, I admitted reluctantly, but still there.
How come Emily saw Luenna and I didn't?
Aaron asked. And why could she see the ship more clearly? Lyle shook his head.
I don't know. I still have more questions than I do answers. I know this, though.
He looked me hard in the eyes, holding me with his stare.
I could barely see the ship from lookout reach today, yet you saw it quite clearly. You have given me hope. I was almost out of that.
I didn't know what to say to that. I couldn't really speak anyway, as something about the look in Lyle's eyes was clogging up my throat. A moment later he stood up.
Look, you'd better be going. Your teacher will be wondering where you are, and the last thing we need is for you to get into trouble.
Aaron and I stood up too. Lyle led us to the door.
I need to think this through, he said. I'll spend all night working on it. Will you come and see me again in the morning?
Of course, I answered for us both.
Good. Come before breakfast, Lyle said. We'll make an early start. I'm not giving up. Not until I have to.
We paused on the doorstep. We're not giving up either, I said. However we can help, we will do. Lyle nodded a thank you at us both. And then, closing the door softly behind us, he went inside and we headed back to the road. I glanced over my shoulder as we walked away. Lyle was in the window. He gave a brief wave and I waved back. Aaron put an arm around me as we made our way back to the hostel. We didn't talk. I guessed his thoughts were as dark and as sad as mine. And at the heart of them, just one question. Did we really stand a chance of rescuing a ship from Atlantis before time was up in 2 days? Chapter 13. I barely slept on Monday night. When I did, it was accompanied by restless dreams where I was trapped underwater in the darkness or in abandoned ships, surrounded by dark, prying eyes, all staring blankly at me. I woke, sweating and breathless, for the third time in an hour. I checked the clock. 6:15. I turned over in my bed, turned again, pulled my sheets off, put them back on. Nothing was working. Finally, I gave up. I got dressed and crept downstairs. The place was silent. Well, of course it was. Why would anyone else be up and about at 6:30 in the morning? Except someone was. Not in the house, but outside across the road. Sitting on a wooden bench in his front garden. I guessed he was having as much trouble sleeping as I was. More, probably. I softly opened the front door and went outside. Lyle! I called as I crossed the road and went over to him. He glanced up at me, his dark eyes not seeing me for a moment, not recognizing anything. The only other time I'd seen eyes like that was on Luena. He shook himself.
Emily, he said, what are you doing up so early?
I shrugged.
Couldn't sleep.
Me neither.
Are you okay? I asked, then wanted to kick myself. Of course he wasn't okay. Lyle stood up.
Actually, I'm glad you're here, he said. I've been up all night working on this, and I think I'm finally getting somewhere.
He waved a hand at the bench.
Look, take a seat. I'll just get some coffee and grab my paperwork, and then we can discuss everything, if you're still on board.
Of course I am. Should I go and wake Aaron? Lyle glanced at his watch.
Let's leave him to sleep a bit longer. We can update him later. Plus, there are a few things I've figured out that I'd like to share with you while Aaron's not here.
As he went off to fetch us drinks, I couldn't help a shiver from darting through me. I was probably just cold. The sun hadn't even risen yet. But I had the feeling it wasn't just that. What had Lyle figured out? And what on earth did he need to tell me that he didn't want Aaron to hear? I sipped my coffee, grimacing as I swallowed. I don't think anyone under 30 actually likes coffee at the best of times, and this one was so strong it looked like soil. At least it was warming me up, though. Lyle noticed my face.
I can get you a hot chocolate, if you prefer.
No, I'm fine. I didn't want to hold this conversation up any longer, even if the coffee was starting to give me palpitations. Lyle pulled over a fold-up chair and sat down beside the bench.
Okay, so as you know, we've seen the ship on the high tide.
And the low tide, too, I added.
Yes, at slack tide. You know what that is?
When the movement stops in between the tide coming in and going out.
Correct. So the first thing I figured out is why we've seen it at these times. At first, I thought it was just because the ship had gone down at high tide. But after talking to you yesterday, I realized I was wrong. We're seeing it then because these are the times in between.
In between?
The ship was caught in between Earth, sea and air. That's what allowed it to become lost to Atlantis. We see it in between the tide coming in and going out.
And the reason we see it is because we are in between human and mer. Lyle wagged a finger at me.
Exactly. You're a quick learner.
so that explains why only Aaron and I could see it when we were there with others. But what about the fact that the ship seems to be fading?
Okay, that's the next thing.
Lyle picked up a notebook he'd brought out with him and flicked through the pages.
Here's what I've come up with. The fact that we're seeing the ship means that it's trying to get back. The fact that it's fading means that those on board are giving up. You remember I told you about time working differently in Atlantis?
Uh-huh.
So remember the day it went missing? Friday was day one. That means it's now day five. In Atlantis, they've been gone for over 6 months already. By the end of today, it could be anything up to a year. Even in normal circumstances, that's long enough for at least some of them to start giving up.
And Atlantis isn't normal.
Not even close to normal. Atlantis has special qualities that make you forget you ever lived anywhere else, make you want to stay there forever. It's like a kind of paradise, and it works like a magnet, keeping you happy and content, smoothing the passage, until the 6 days are up.
When it's all over and you're never coming back.
Exactly.
I thought for a moment. So by the end of tomorrow, that's it. Game over. Lyle nodded.
That's how it works.
So what can we do? I asked. Are we giving up?
No, never, not while there's still a chance.
He replied with such force he almost sounded angry. Okay, go on, I said carefully. Lyle ran a hand through his hair.
Okay, so you remember yesterday I told you that some folk believe that there is a portal between the two worlds.
You said that was why we were seeing the ship.
Yes, but this portal isn't just about seeing the ship. In some quarters, there are whispered rumours about the possibility of moving between the two worlds. No one has any proof that this can be done, but there are stories.
And what do the stories say?
It's very rare that this portal can open, and most believe it is only a myth anyway.
Lyle went on.
But if it is true, I think we have a chance.
That's brilliant, I said. He frowned.
Well, yes, I'm going to try it, but I don't know if it will work.
Why not?
Okay, this is about being in between two states. The ship was pulled down between Earth and sea, and is now stuck between this world and the next. Do you realize how significant that is?
I think so.
Well, the stories say that if you can double the number of in-between states that took the ship, the boat will appear again, even if it is no longer trying to get back. And then you can find a key to creating a bridge between the two worlds.
Double the in-between states? So you mean we need 4 of them, and we can reach the ship.
That is what the stories say. And even if they are true, the chances of this being achieved are so slim. It's no wonder that most believe the stories are myths with no foundation. But I'm determined to try. Whilst there's hope, I'm not giving up.
Okay. We need 4 states, I mused. Well, firstly there's us being semi-Mers.
Correct. That's 1.
And then there's the fact that we see the ship at slack tide when the ocean is between movement in and out.
That's 2, which is enough to see it,
Lyle agreed.
We need 2 more to reach it.
I thought as hard as I could. What else was there? I shook my head. I can't think of any more. Lyle flicked through his book and opened it on a page with times and numbers written tightly together in columns. I leaned in to look. What's that? I asked.
tide tables.
Lyle ran a finger down the page. He stopped at Sunday's date.
Look, see, these were the times of high and low tide on Sunday, and yesterday too. This is when the ship was visible.
I read the figures. They tallied with when I'd seen it.
Okay, I said. But what? Look here.
Lyle pointed at today's date. High tide had passed about half an hour ago. Today's low tide would be at 12:18 p.m. The next high at 6:20 p.m. So that's when we should see it today, I said.
Yes, if they are still trying to get back. If they haven't given up completely yet. But look, this is the important bit.
He pointed at the next column.
See the high tides for tomorrow, he said.
Wednesday's high tides were at 6:41 in the morning, and then 6:53 in the evening. What was he getting at? I still don't see what's so significant, I said. Lyle flicked over to the next page in his book. More figures.
What are these? I asked. Sunrise and sunset times, he said. It's just after the autumn equinox, which means that dawn and dusk are more or less 12 hours apart.
He ran his finger down to Wednesday's date.
See that? He asked. What time does it say for dawn?
6:46 a.m., I read aloud.
Exactly, right in the middle of slack tide, and dusk is at 6:59 p.m., right in the middle of slack tide again.
My brain cells were working as hard as they could. Finally, I understood what Lyle was saying. That's another in-between state. Dawn and dusk are in between day and night. Lyle smiled.
Yes.
And it's on day 6, the last day we could possibly reach the ship, I mused.
From what I've learned, if we can find a fourth in-between state, and if the portal exists, it will open at dusk for the length of the slack tide. On the next high tide, it will mirror this movement and open again before closing for good.
That's a lot of ifs, I murmured.
I know, but ifs are the best thing we've got right now.
So what's the fourth in-between state? I asked. Lyle shook his head.
I can't think of one.
He bit on the end of the nail. I hadn't seen him do that before. What? I asked. There's something you're not saying.
No, there isn't, he said quickly. No, I'm not. I can't.
What? What is it? I insisted. Lyle looked as if he might cry. His eyes narrowed into dark holes.
I can't, he said again.
Please, I begged. What is it? Tell me. He paused for ages. Then, in a really quiet voice, he said,
It's you.
What? What's me?
You can do things that neither Aaron nor I are capable of. You experienced the ship more strongly than Aaron did. You saw Luenna when Aaron didn't. More importantly than that, she saw you.
I wish it were me. And we'll figure something out because I'm not going to let you use it. But Emily, you have one more in-between quality.
Really? What is it? Lyle smiled sadly. He looked as if he'd disappeared somewhere miles away.
It wasn't until I watched the two of you walk away last night that I realized what it was.
What? What is it? Lyle held my eyes with his and said,
You are between like and love.
I gawked at him. I don't know what I'd been expecting him to say, but it certainly wasn't that.
I'm what? I can see it. You're teetering between the two states. You probably won't be for much longer, but you are now.
But, I spluttered. I mean, what about Aaron?
Isn't he the same? Lyle paused for a moment, then shook his head.
No, he said simply. Aaron is not the same.